All right, and welcome to the Sports Ethos Los Angeles Chargers podcast. I'm here with Shane and Brandon as always. How are you guys doing?
Good. Yourself?
I think we're doing pretty good, boys. I think we're excited for another show this week.
Yeah, good day. We're recording this on summer solstice. It's currently 8:10 Pacific and it's still light outside. What the hell?
For like another hour.
Yeah, but still, what the hell's going on?
I love it.
It is good. It is very,
I wish
very
it,
good.
Dude, I wish it was like this every day. I don't see. Here's the thing, not to get in too much of a tangent, but you know,
I make one comment if we're on a tangent now.
I just gotta say this, and then I'll be done until the next segment. I think, you know, as far as temperature goes, I like it here, like in May, like April, May, or September, October. It's like in the 60s most days. It's nice. I like that. But when it's bright from 5 a.m. to 9 p.m., I wish we could have that every day. I could do without the, you know, 80, 90 degree days that come with that, but I like it. Because then it just feels like it's just dark out, like, when it's bedtime. That's great. And not, like, during half the day.
Brandon, what's up in your neck of the woods on these summer days?
You know, it's nice to have it. See, I like it at work where it gets dark, but not like, you know, winter dark where it's pitch black. Like it gets dark around like, or starts getting dark around 8, but you know, it's still nice. Like I still like a little bit of that, but after I'm done sweating my, you know what off, for most of the day, I love the fact that, you know, I can be outside at 7, 8, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, and it's still warm, but it's dark, so I'm not worried about, like, you know, having a heat stroke. Only problem is that we're in the middle of like one of the hottest like stretches that we're gonna have all year. Like every single part of the country, I don't know about you guys, but every single part of the country I saw is 95 plus right now.
Yeah, we're at 80. We're at 79-80 currently in Seattle. Oh,
I wish.
We've got 70 right now.
Yeah, here every day is 95 plus right now.
Jesus.
So we're dying. Jesus. Or am I dying?
Yeah, sounds like it sucks. It couldn't be me.
Yeah,
we'll get that at some point here in August. We always seem to.
Yeah.
Thank God. New Jersey weather's not fun. It's not.
No, it's not. Unless you're on the shore, then it's a little better.
Yeah, but that's like the only place here that actually is good to be around all year. Other than that, no, you're dying. All right, let's get out of this. Let's get out of this weather topic.
Let's go to something that's going to grind our heated gears here. Shane brought this up to me yesterday, and when I originally saw this, I didn't think we'd be talking about it, and then he explained it to me, and I was like, shit, we need to talk about this. This is actually stupid. The AP Comeback Player of the Year award is getting changed, or at least they're giving better guidance to it. I'll just read the text from AP senior writer Rob Matty, who oversees the AP voting for the Associated Press, as well as the All-Pro and NFL awards votings. The spirit of the AP Comeback Player of the Year award is to honor a player who has demonstrated resilience in the face of adversity by overcoming illness, physical injury, or other circumstances that led him to miss previous playing time, that led him to miss playing time the previous season. Voters for the award will be told as their guidance for voting on the award. So Shane, explain to me what you explained to me yesterday when we were talking about this, because it actually made me kind of rethink everything about this award. So go ahead. What do these new changes exactly mean?
Well, by definition, by what they are suggesting here, this means guys like Geno Smith and Joe Flacco, the last 2 years, from my understanding, would not be eligible to even be nominated. Which, you know, I think is kind of silly, because you know, in coming back from an injury, that's not the only type of comeback somebody can have. You know, I mean, Geno Smith, starting with him, I mean, he was on the bench for 8 years, I think.
Yeah.
And I thought, I genuinely thought he was like a bottom 10 backup quarterback in the NFL. I'm not even kidding. I did. And then, you know, kind of out of nowhere, he just all of a sudden starts and is a Pro Bowler his first season. You know, I mean, that's unheard of. You know, it's sort of like Ryan Tannehill in 2019. And he won that season. So, you know, and same with Flacco. I mean, he's been awful for many years. I mean, hell, I never thought he was that good anyways, but whatever. That's besides the point. The point is, then he comes in as the fourth guy and, you know, a free agent off his couch and is amazing. So, you know, I think something like that is just as impressive, if not more impressive, than, you know, somebody who is young and already a good player, who we know is a good player, come back from an injury and perform at a high level. Because, not that that's easy to do, but, you know, when you're a young guy, it's a lot easier for Christian McCaffrey to come back from a season-ending ACL and play as well as he normally does because he's, you know, 27 or at the time 26, whatever, and was already in great shape. It's much tougher for a guy like Joe Flacco to be, you know, probably not in the best shape because he's sitting on his couch and eating peanut butter and jelly, and, you know, come into a team where he doesn't know the playbook, doesn't know the coaches, the facility, anything, and immediately make an impact. That's really incredible. So, you know, if these parameters didn't exist, then, you know, if we look at the other comeback player of the year nominees, the only one who came back from an injury was DeMar Hamlin, so he would have won. Which, you know, some people would say, yeah, he should have, which I disagree with personally. It's obviously horrible what happened to him, very scary, but you know, he didn't really even play.
He didn't play enough. So. That was a big reason why Joe Flacco was our unanimous comeback player of the year.
Like 10 snaps. Yeah. Yeah, he played 10 snaps. Plus, from what I read, and this is not to, you know, downplay what happened to DeMar, but it seemed like, you know, the thing that happened was obviously quite traumatic, but the physical recovery, really, there really wasn't much, because it wasn't like he hurt, you know, one of his, or tore a body part that, like his appendages, one of his appendages that he needs to run or to play the game, you know. It was more just that he had this weird heart thing, and then once he was out of it, he was pretty much fine. You know, of course, there's more to it than that, but so it wasn't like he had to put in as much work as to be back in playing shape as some other guys would. And again, I'm not saying that to like downplay what happened. It was very serious. I mean, the guy almost fucking died. Like, that's that, you know, but anyway, so it's just kind of interesting that they're saying this now after, you know, the last, I guess, like three of the last five winners have been, you know, guys who just came back from the bench, quote unquote, but obviously there's more to it than that.
Yeah, it's definitely a weird stipulation. Brandon, what are your thoughts on sort of the future of this award?
You know, when I when I'm thinking about this award, and it's something that we always talk about every year, especially in the past couple of years because of how controversial I guess the winners have been, or the not at least the nominees in total have been. I get the purpose or the reasoning for them wanting to change it, but just like how Geno Smith, said, they rolled me off, I didn't write back. Like a player that comes back from almost not having a career, due to just being bad or being on bad teams or being a backup because the star quarterback is blocking them from being, like, that's equally as impressive as coming back from an injury to me. I don't get, how that can be kind of something that could be maybe excluded from this award going forward, because Joe Flacco easily deserved it last year. When Baker Mayfield came in fresh off a plane and had to learn what the Rams did and go out there and win a football game, it was impressive. What Josh Dobbs did, especially bouncing around to two teams and then trying to figure out how to, two teams that he wasn't supposed to be a starter on and figure out how to play on both of those teams and win quite a few games with them. And play, decently well for what was expected. Those things are anomalies. Just like it's more of an anomaly than a player tearing their ACL and coming back and having a monster season the year after. That happens a lot more than somebody who just comes back off of a really, really bad year to dominate. You don't usually come back from being bad. You can come back from tearing an ACL. You can come back from, some sort of illness or what have you. But it is a lot, and that's a lot harder. It's not, an injury, and a big injury is never easy. But it's just as impressive to come back from quote unquote sucking, lacking confidence, being a bench guy, being a guy that when Joe Flacco was a guy they basically found off the couch and put him in there. Those things are just as important as a player coming off of a bad injury or illness. And thankfully Shane said it and I didn't have to, but yeah, if we were going by these new kind of, parameters set for it, then DeMar Hamlin would have won last year, and he shouldn't have. I mean, like we were saying, not taking anything from what he went through, but Joe Flacco easily deserved it more. DeMar didn't play. And the thing is, when he did play, it was a garbage time, 2 seconds for a kneel down half the time. So, like, what are we doing here? He's not even making a hit on the field. I'm on the same, wavelength as Shane. I think we all kind of are, but I don't know. I'm cool when they want to change rules to benefit the game. But when you want to start changing that awards too, now I'm like getting like, okay, this is becoming a little too much, like really too much now. So I mean, we'll see what happens going forward and who ends up being the nominees this year, and then we'll kind of judge it off of that and all that stuff. We'll see what happens, but as of right now, it just doesn't sit well with me to kind of change this award around, especially because it's one of the very, very meaningful award. Not that the other ones aren't, but this one is very meaningful because this means a lot to the players that are nominated, so, or that they feel that they should. So it's definitely kind of weird, but we'll see how it is, especially with this season coming up.
And that's the thing, like, when you think about the nominees last year, the only nominee under this rule set would have been DeMar Hamlin, pretty much.
Yeah.
I can't think of other nominees. Right. And this year, what is it, Aaron Rodgers? Is your only, maybe, Joe Burrow, maybe? Guys who potentially are probably going to have productive years regardless. It just doesn't do anything. And that's kind of where I have an issue with. It's like where you guys are at, I'm at the same spot. It's like this, on the surface, it seems like, okay, that I get it, because that was my original thought. Like, okay, I get it. Like, when I think of the comeback player of the year, I think of when AP won it in 2012, along with him winning MVP. But like that.
Manning won that, but yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, my bad. But, like, I remember, what was
it? I know what you mean.
Yeah, But still, I mean, it's
come back and AP was MVP.
Yeah, but still, both guys who came off injuries and perfect ones at that. That is how I viewed the award in general. But as we talked about the last few years, the award has changed because of the nominees and the kind of talent that these different guys are showing, and guys who have struggled who, you know, are getting starting jobs and things like that. And you can see that evolve even beyond the quarterback position moving forward. So this kind of hurts the award in that sense as well. It's definitely a bit of a mess for sure.
I always looked at it. Oh, sorry.
No, continue, Shane. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, how I've always looked at it is like, there's, you know, if a guy like Christian McCaffrey is hurt, he knows that once he rehabs and is healthy, he's still going to have his starting job.
Yeah.
There's,
you know what I mean?
For sure, yep. Yeah.
Whereas Geno Smith, for example, he was fighting for a roster spot for 8 mm-hmm. years. You know, like, he didn't know year to year if he'd be back or if he, you know, which I guess you could say that about a lot of guys, but you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So,
especially to be to a place where you're a journeyman basically and say, and then for you to play that well and then say, oh yeah, we'll pay you a somewhat premium quarterback contract. That doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what's right. funny too? It was funny when because that was just gonna. You said it better than I could. I was trying to get along those lines, but that's how I was feeling too. I'm like, yeah, when you've either been a backup for so long because you've been blocked, or whether you've just had poor performances in your career and you end up getting relegated more or less to that role, and it's like you have 1 foot out of the NFL already. You're 1 foot out the door, essentially. So.
Yeah,
you know, don't, you know, obviously, you know, backup quarterbacks don't last long. Well, unless you're Chase Daniel, but you know, backup quarterbacks don't last long. It's like, how many shots are you gonna get? Like, you know, when you come back from an injury, like a CMC, like an AP, all these different guys, you know, you have the kind of that job security at least for that next season. So it's like, so you get that chance to prove that automatically you get that chance to prove that you can come back at the level you were before the injury. When you're a backup, you have to fight for that chance. So, or if you're coming off your couch and they need a veteran and you're on the back end of your career and everybody knows that you might not be the same, you have to fight to just win games and prove that you can still perform well enough to be a good leader, a good teammate, a good player. So, you know, to get rid of just that part or just pretend it doesn't exist now is kind of ridiculous, really.
Yeah.
Even if your team doesn't give you that chance when you come back, like a CMC, guess what? There's a lot of other teams that will.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, for sure. Know? I wonder how we're going to stipulate the award next year. Again, I want to see what the nominees are first, but I might try to keep it like it was before, because I just like that a lot better.
Yeah.
For what we like to do on the show. Shane, your pick for our rewatch this week was Week 11, 2018 Monday Night Football, the classic Rams Chiefs game. Go ahead and talk about why you picked this game, and just different things you noticed on rewatch.
Yeah, well, I picked this game because it's the greatest game ever. No, I'm kidding. It's
one of the greatest games ever.
It's up there.
I think. In my lifetime, it's my favorite Monday night game, certainly, that I've seen. And again, that's just in my lifetime. I've only been watching the NFL since 2010, so, you know, make what you will with that. But anyways, this is one of the, I mean, aside from it being really fun and, you know, being two teams who were both 9-1 at the time. They're both, you know, you got this Mahomes' first season, the rising star that everyone's talking about, and then you got the Rams, who were real flashy and, you know, the cool new McVay, Shanahan kind of offense that's starting to take over. And it was kind of a chaotic buildup anyways, because it was supposed to be in Mexico City, and then there was problems with that. So then it was moved to LA kind of last minute. And, you know, but it's just, it was like, it was like a chaotic party, you know. It's like, it's just, it's not going to go well, but it's going to be a fun time. And, yeah, and, it, you know, it's just, that's exactly what it was. But more than that, you know, it's, obviously, there's the high score. But I think something that people say about that game is they say, oh, well, why is the game so great? There was no defense. Oh, there was great defense in the game.
Not true at all. Not true at all. So many fumbles and interceptions by both teams. Yeah, not true at all.
Yeah.
There were seven turnovers in that game. Seven.
Yeah, half the points were scored by defense. You know, so it was, yeah, it was a great game defensively, but it just didn't feel like it because of all the scoring. But in any case, it's just, you know, the back and forth was just insanity. And, you know, the crowd too was so into it. You know, it's, I mean, SoFi is cool, don't get me wrong, but, you know, there's something really special about the Coliseum. Like, that is one of the great football venues in the country. And it was absolutely electric. And, you know, the fireworks and the every single big play, it was loud. And, you know, and, like, it's just, it's infectious. You can feel it through the TV. So, yeah, that's the main reason. And there's, you know, there's some other more minuscule details that I'll get into shortly. But what are your guys' thoughts?
I just want to give some background really quick. Obviously, this game was supposed to be played in Mexico City, Estadio Azteca. The reason why the game was moved back to LA was because, as expected, the field turf was shit. Like, it was completely unplayable. And they knew that, like, a couple weeks before the game, and then they moved it back to LA. During that switch, obviously, the Chiefs, and I think even the Rams, were stationed up in Colorado, obviously, with the elevation concerns. While that was going on, the biggest thing happening in the country at that time were the massive fires around the LA and California area. If you guys remember, on the broadcast, they talk about that American Red Cross helping relief and things of that nature. And of course, I think there was some firefighters and their family members who light up the cauldron. So really emotional time as well for the area for that game. So that backdrop is also what makes this game, I think, super memorable, that people forget. Just a really difficult time in that area. But go ahead, Brandon. What are your thoughts?
And you know what the best part about this is? That this wasn't a shootout just between, like, two, like, average teams at the time. After this game, the Rams were 10-1, and the Chiefs were 9-2. Like, these were two amazing teams at that point in time. I remember the build-up before the game. I remember the build-up they had pretty much that whole season, you know, advertising that game, because obviously Goff was still younger at that time. You know, Mahomes was on fire, you know, especially in the early years. And I just remember, especially as we got closer to the game, like, even, like, especially the week before, they kept hyping up, like, oh, yeah, you don't want to miss this. Like, two of the best teams in football going at it. And, you know, here we are thinking, oh, we're going to get, you know, maybe like a 31-28 kind of game or something like that. It's like, who would have thought both teams would drop 50 on each other? Like, you don't see a game, unless it's basketball, where two teams drop a ton of points on each other and it's a close game. This is a 3-point game. This was two teams that dropped 50 on each other. This was literally, there were seven turnovers in this entire game. There were two fumbles from each quarterback that were lost. and Mahomes threw three interceptions. Both quarterbacks threw for 400 yards.
And that's the thing. Both quarterbacks actually played really well. The picks don't tell the story.
They combined for 10 touchdowns. 10. 10 passing TDs between two quarterbacks. Like, that's just... And Goff had a rushing TD. Mahomes didn't. So, literally, they actually combined for 11 TDs. So, like, the insanity of this game, and it had everything. The only thing it didn't have was a running game.
Todd Gurley had some good moments, but other than
that. Yeah, but it's like, nothing like over the top crazy that you expect from a game that's like this high scoring. So like both these teams just threw the damn ball. Both quarterbacks had over 45 passing attempts. Like, I mean, but then again, once you saw after what happened, basically by midway through the second quarter, they had to keep passing the ball because it was just, okay, we gotta get down the field quick here. So, you know, like, and it's crazy. This is insane. I'm actually looking at the receiving stats right now. And Tyreek Hill had 215 yards. And two TDs.
Brandon, I want you to go to the Rams receivers. Do you notice something about our rewatch series over the last 2 weeks?
That it features Brandon Cooks?
Brandon Cooks, two straight weeks. How about that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. People don't understand how great Brandon Cooks really is.
Oh, yeah.
Listen, is that guy going to be a Hall of Famer? Probably not. But at the same time, he's had a hell of a career for himself. Like, he's one of the most underrated receivers in NFL history. He doesn't get enough credit for even for that game, for really any of the seasons that he's... Because he had a lot of 1,000-yard seasons. People don't realize that. He's had a ton of them. And it's crazy. When I'm looking at the passing from both teams, like, the Rams' passing game is so much more evenly distributed than the Chiefs. I mean, granted, the Rams kind of had more all-around, like, talent at that time. Because literally the Chiefs' third, like, Hill and Kelce were both in their, especially both of those guys were in their primes at that point. Both of them had 10 receptions. Those guys alone, out of the 478 yards, those guys combined for literally like over 340 of Mahomes' yards. So that's just absolutely nuts. And then I forgot about that this guy even existed. Chris Conley had 74 yards on 7 catches and 2 TDs.
He was big in this game.
I forgot that dude existed. I remember the game. Of course, I rewatched the highlights because they showed them on the NFL socials last week. So I was watching the highlights, and I'm like, I remember the game, but I'm like, I did not remember Chris Conley having that big of a game. And I'm like, the guy had 2 of his 7 catches were touchdowns. He had 74 yards. Like, that's actually kind of crazy. It's this game, you know, Aaron Donald had 2 sacks in this game. You know, there were some sacks. I mean, there wasn't a ton of sacks, but there was 8 sacks in this game in total. And you know, I remember why that the one thing I did remember from this game was how quick of a lead the Rams got out to, and then just Kansas City responded.
I think it was like 15 to 17 points, something like that.
Yeah, it was at one point it was 13-0, then it was 16-7, and then by halftime
it was 16-0 at one point.
Oh God, it's insane. That, you know, when I think about it, the game at half is 23-23, and I'm like, well, like, I remember sitting there at half, I'm like, well, this game surely won't, you know, somebody's got to end up slowing somebody down. And nope. It didn't happen.
Nope.
And it didn't happen. Like, but it's crazy because it's like, they did slow it. Like, this is probably the weirdest game where it's like, you, a casual fan that didn't watch that game, might look at that score and go back to it and be like, oh, you know, just like we said, you know, there's not a ton of defense. It's like, but there was. The problem was that the turnovers happened so fast and in such good field position that the scoring was even quicker.
Oh my god.
It's insane that like a game like this, it might never happen again. And I'm glad that we were not just alive for it, but like, you know, this isn't like a game that was played when we were like 8, 9 years old. This is a game that was played when we were what, 18, 19 years old. So, yeah, you know, this was a game that was played when we're fully aware of it, that we can fully actually remember it and then go back and watch the highlights of it. So it's nuts. Just a game like this with, you know, both quarterbacks, and, you know, Jared Goff was not a game manager that night. He's been a game manager for nearly the majority of his career, or actually not even the majority, right? 90% of his career has been a game manager, but not that night. And the thing is, like I said, any quarterback, and I've said this before, any quarterback that can out-duel Patrick Mahomes is a GOAT in my eyes. Jalen Hurts has done it. Jared Goff has done it, but not too many quarterbacks have done it. And Goff got the best of him that night. And it's crazy to think, like, usually, if you just look at the touchdown in that game, and you see that Mahomes threw 6 touchdowns, you're like, oh, so the Chiefs won by like a billion, right? Wrong. They lost by 3. Like, it's like, how the hell is that possible? It's everything about that game is so legendary from start to finish. But you know what's crazy too is like, this wasn't just a game where like it's a 54-51 game, but it's not a game that was like, oh yeah, we have a team up by like 14 points with like 2 minutes left, and the other team is kind of, or not 14, let's say like 20 points or whatever, like 2 minutes left, and the other team is just catching up in garbage time. Like, no, the Rams had to literally win this game with about a minute and a half left. And they did, but then Mahomes gets a chance, and the game eventually ends, because obviously, you know, we know what happens, but, you know, stuff happens where, you know, you get that one final drive and you just don't finish it. But my God, both these teams were absolutely insane that year. And God, when I think about just how crazy this game was, like, I think it's the best, because this was Monday night, wasn't it? Monday Night Football?
Monday night.
Yeah.
So this is the best Monday Night Football game of all time. And listen, I'm partial to my Eagles. Everybody on this pod knows that. And I remember the Monday Night Massacre against Washington. And that game is forever burned into my brain. It's just one of the best Monday Night games I've ever seen my team play. But this game is by far the best Monday Night Football game I've ever watched. And I don't even think there's anything that might come close to this ever again. I mean, there's games that might be good, or we might say, oh, it's the game of the year or whatever. But this was the game of the
century,
a decade,
maybe.
Of the century. Like, that was nuts. It's not just a classic for the year. It was a classic for the decade, at the very least. So, or at least for the last 50 years, even. So, yeah, God, dude, like, any adjective you can use to describe this game, any positive adjective you can use to describe this game, is not enough. Just not enough. Yeah. It's a freaking classic in every way, shape, and form. And I just can't. Every time the highlights come around, because they show them at the same time every year, every time the highlights come around for this game, I will literally sit there and watch it, because I'm just like, I'm still in awe that this existed. So it's like, it's just, and that it was a modern NFL game. This wasn't an NFL game from like 20 years ago. It was a modern one. You know, so
a modern classic.
My God, yeah, modern classic, all time classic, shootout, whatever you want to call it. There's nothing that can probably ever come close to this game ever again.
I have a couple things that hurts this game, and I'm going to talk about that right now. First, the Chiefs' penalties were probably the biggest reason they lost this game. A lot of really bad penalties. Here's the thing that made this game almost unwatchable for me. I've watched this game now 3 times, obviously one when it happened, watched it once for show way back when, and then watched it again for this. I woke up and started watching it, and then I was like, oh god, I'm going to have to speed through this in an hour, aren't I? Because I can't deal with the commentary. Joe Tessitore...
Oh, I forgot that he called that. Yeah, you're right.
Joe Tessitore, Joe Tessitore, Jason Witten, and Booger McFarlane's infamous Boogermobile. That the Boogermobile that you couldn't even see if you were in the front row at the games. Fam, when they originally commented Monday Night Football, I was like, this is fine. And now that I've watched this game a third time, I was like, oh, I can't do this. I'm going to speed through this game in like 45 minutes. I can't. The commentary is so atrocious. It's probably the worst commentated football game ever. And that's saying something. For how good the game is, the commentary hurts it so much. It's so bad. It's bland. It's boring. And we're going to get...
At least he sounds excited.
Nobody sounds excited. Like, it's...
He does.
I guess, but not...
The play-by-play guy.
Here's the thing. Joe Tessitore is a boxing commentator, not a football commentator. He does call it, but that dude's a boxing commentator. That's where...
Why was he on ESPN this year?
Because they were looking for a commentary team, and they just picked those guys. Jason Witten just had retirement. This was their first year commentating, too. This was their only year doing it. And thank heavenly God.
When was McDonough when he did it?
The year after.
Oh, my God. Back-to-back garbage.
McDonough was fine, I guess. But, bro, like, there's a lot of problems with this broadcast in general. And we're going to get to Euro 2024 and Copa America 2024. I have some problems with that broadcast that are even worse than what we're talking about right now. We'll get to it in a bit. We'll explain why we're going to be talking about the Euros here shortly. But, there are so many problems with the biggest problem with this broadcast other than the commentary is the sponsorships. Whole Foods Unstoppable Play. Why the fuck is Whole Foods sponsoring this? What the hell is going on?
Because LA.
I guess. And then there's like a, what is it, like GMC redefining performance or something? No, Gap. Gap redefining. Why the fuck is Gap doing this? It's just like, it's the worst sponsorships ever. And one of the only broadcast positives is Chainsmokers had an amazing like halftime show during this, because this was around the era where ESPN was experimenting with like having like actual halftime shows, and that was actually really good. Like they had a really good set that year. I think that was the only year of them doing that.
I like Chainsmokers.
The commentary hurts this game so much. Like I wanted to talk about the commentary more, like in terms of like what they were saying. But I couldn't. I just 1 minute in this game, I was like, I'm going to finish this really quick. I'm going to speed through this game. I'm going to watch a replay and move on. Because I can't. I just simply cannot. It's so bad. And it pains me how bad it is. It hurts this game so much. It really hurts it. Like people say commentary doesn't make or break a game. I'm sorry, it does. At least for me. It does, and this game is so hurt by it, by an absolute mile. I've only watched this game 3 times. I don't think I ever want to watch it again. Just because the commentary is some of the worst you'll ever hear.
Isn't that another running theme from last week when I crapped on Chris Collinsworth and Al Michaels?
See, I thought, but the thing is, I sat through that entire game. Because I liked what they did. Like I know you had your problems about that commentary, but this is a different level here. Any like final thoughts on the commentary? What other stuff you wanted to bring up about this game? Go ahead.
I mean, yeah, that ESPN commentary team at that time was obviously not my favorite, but I was like, whatever. It didn't bother me too much. I think in general, that game to me felt like the start of our current era in football, which sounds dramatic, but it's true. Since then, that's kind of been, you know, the standard as far as how people run offenses and, you know, and just like what the consumer likes. And, you know, the Rams are still very relevant. The Chiefs are winning all their Super Bowls. The Rams won theirs, you know, so it just feels like that was a significant momentum shift that night, in a good way. And it's also a lesson about how quickly the NFL moves, because that game was just 5 years ago. And there was not a single Ram who played that night who is still on the team.
My God.
It's unbelievable. That's unbelievable.
Cooper Kupp is still on the team, but he didn't play. He was out with an injury.
He was on IR, yeah.
That sounds like a comedy.
Not a single guy from that who played that night is still on the team. And with the Chiefs, there's only three dudes: Mahomes, Kelsey, Chris Jones. That's it.
God.
Everyone else gone. 5 years. That's it. That's not that much time. But that's how, you know, that's how quickly talent in the NFL comes and goes, and how quickly guys want to get paid and want to do this, that, whatever, you know.
This November it'd be 6 years, which is, I mean, even so, still 6 years ago is like, you know, like I still have Super Bowl hangover from Eagles Patriots, and I'm like, that was 6 years ago, and I'm like, holy crap, like are we serious right now? Like, yeah, so it's just, well, first of all, time moves so fast, but when you're watching sports, you don't realize how much it really does move. So it's insane.
Yeah. There aren't too many industries where you have 95% turnover in the span of 5 years.
Yeah, that's the NFL for you.
You know? Yeah. Anyways,
we are going to talk about Euro 2024. Obviously, we're in kind of the summer of soccer here. First off, I'm going to talk about Fox's coverage of this. It's not good. The studio is fine, but they are also doing it in LA on a green screen, which is ridiculous. Same with Copa America. All the commentators are good. Minus Landon Donovan, he's really bad. He's really bad. I'm sorry, just bad. Brandon, go ahead. Give us your overall thoughts on the Euro so far. It's honestly been quite fun.
I as someone who doesn't care too much about soccer, but cares obviously when, you know, I root for, you know, like I don't care about the Copa America. I care about the Euro. More so, because of Portugal, and when it comes to like just their coverage, like it's the Euro and the World Cup's what I care about, because it's always, you know, CR7 at the front, Portugal at the front. But this Euro in general, you know, for me being like, I know soccer, I'm not some idiot, but I'm also like, I'm obviously not as well versed in it as I am in the other, you know, the big four American sports, but I still know it enough and know the rules and things like that and watch it and have a good time with it. And this Euro, from what I can see, it is probably the wildest bunch of games. I mean, the commentary is fun outside of Landon Donovan. Just get him off my TV.
I'm sad. I'm sad that Ian Dark is partnered with him, because Ian is so good.
Yeah.
Landon just doesn't talk. He doesn't know, like, how to jump in. It's unbelievable.
They were saying, and I saw somebody in the comments on Instagram say, him, like, Alexi Lalas is not good either, but Landon Donovan easily takes the cake for worst. And it's just funny how the American soccer players are the ones that just sound foolish. Like, it's like, well, American soccer player, that right there should give you a clue as to why they're bad. But, like, you know, someone in the comments said it's a battle between Landon Donovan and Alexi Lalas for who's the biggest asshole on you know.
On Fox.
Like, yeah, pretty much.
I love how the only good American soccer player right now is actually doing great commentary, Stu Holden. Stu's great.
Yeah.
Stu's always been great.
I actually do like him. But the majority of the other ones, even like Tim Howard wasn't bad, but Tim Howard wasn't good either.
Dempsey for Clint commentary. Clint
Dempsey is on CBS. He's fine.
Like, you know, I get it, but I mean, especially like, I feel like the commentary is ruining a lot of these moments in the Euro. Because once again, we talk about announcing that ruins moments and ruins games. These games have been electric. There have been so many upsets already, more so than what we're used to. And yet the commentary is ruining it. Almost every single one of them.
Oh my God.
Like, it's so bad. And the worst part is I have to sit through, because you know what's crazy? Because the Portugal games are on Fox, I have to sit through Landon Donovan talk about my Portuguese national team. I don't want to, bro. I don't want to.
I'm going to repeat this to our viewers. Ian, so think about this. John Champion and Stu Holden are doing Copa America. And they're going to do the final for Copa America. They're going to do the U.S. games. Your Euro 2024 commentary team for the final is going to be Ian Dark and Landon Donovan. Ian Dark is the only good part of that team, and he's been incredible. He's been incredible, but like, bruh. But you have John Champion and Stu Holden on the other end. Which one would you rather prefer? Come on.
It hurts.
Yeah.
It hurts so bad.
Shane, what are your overall thoughts on the Euro? And Denmark actually doing well. They drew against England today.
You know, yeah. I mean, I think... Yeah, by the way, viewers, if you don't know, I am a quarter Danish from my dad's side. My last name is a Danish name. And I have a Denmark flag in my room. So I, you know, when it comes to national stuff, I always root for them when it comes to soccer, at least, because, you know, I'm also like Hungarian and Greek and Irish.
I am Romanian.
You know, countries that are not.
Sorry to interrupt, but yeah, I am Romanian and Hungarian, so my rooting interest is in the Copa America with the U.S. because frick both of those teams.
But yeah, don't even mention my nationality. There's too many to name. Will be here all night.
Go ahead. Sorry, but, Dan. I just had to throw that out there. My rooting interest is on the U.S.
No, you're good. It's, you know, and not that Denmark has a great team, but like they definitely. You know, feels like the most competitive of all of them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, of course, I'm, you know, I am a fan of the U.S. first, but then, you know, Denmark after that, because that's also the only country of my heritage that I have been to. So I, you know, I've gotten to know a lot of the people there. So I feel a connection to it. But anyways, yeah, no, I was totally expecting a loss today versus England. And, you know, it would have been nice if they won, but, hey, I'll take a draw. Like,
it feels like a win for sure, I'll say that.
Remember,
in a way, yeah. Right, yeah. And, you know, that's the thing about England, because I was reading up on them today, and you know, they always get really hyped, but in these international tournaments like Copa Euro, World Cup, whatever, they really don't do that great.
Yeah, it's not coming home. I'm sorry, England fans. It's not coming home. It's not coming. Yeah, like, it's
not happening. Everybody hypes them up, but then they get taken out by, you know, Germany, France. Remember a few years ago when they lost to Iceland? That was awesome. but you know what I mean. It's stuff like that. Well, we'll get to this shortly with our next topic, but they're kind of like the Dallas Cowboys of soccer, yeah, okay. Of European soccer.
So that brings up our next topic. So this was kind of brought up throughout the week because we're excited about the Euros and all this stuff. And Alexi Lawless said, he's like, well, if you want to get into the Euros and you're an NFL guy, my easiest comparison for England is the Dallas Cowboys. And then Brian and I got into a debate about this and Shane got involved. So we decided for like a fun kind of soccer, summer of soccer and NFL segment, we do every team in the Euros and give me the NFL team they're most comparable to.
Oh, Lord.
We're not going to start with England. And I said, don't make a list. Just kind of go off the cuff. We're not going to start with England. We're going to start with host country, Germany. Go ahead. So we're going to go by the group as it stands currently, the live standings.
Okay. It's funny because I always make jokes about how much I hate soccer because for the most part I do. but these tournaments where it's like, you know, these internationals where it's the countries against each other and like the World Cup, Euro, CONCACAF. Or not CONCACAF.
Copa America this year.
Yes, yeah. Thank you. I love this stuff. I totally get into it. Anyways. I know more about the national teams than I do the individual clubs.
Yeah, so do I.
So Germany, it's kind of interesting. I looked at these teams a couple different ways because, you know, Germany historically to me is like the Patriots because they've won the most, they have the between like Copa Euro and the World Cup, they've won the most, they have the most appearances, you know, and then nowadays like they're not as good as they used to be. I mean, they're still great, but you know, it's not like they were, which that's the one difference is the Patriots are not good anymore at all, but in any case. So that's like, I kind of did two comps for most of these teams. So like, that's their overall historical one. But, you know, like at this moment right now, they kind of feel like the Chiefs, you know, it's like they're in a division or group in this case, that's a little easier than some of the others. And they're just totally demolishing everybody. So, yeah.
Brandon, do you agree with that? This is going to be like combined between you two. I want to see what you guys do.
No, I was thinking of the Patriots too, although a lot of their success came a while ago, or at least a big chunk of it, the majority of it came a long time ago. And it feels like because of that, they get put up in the top, you know, of the world every time a big tournament comes around, but they're still... But now they used
in 2014. That was the last time.
Yeah, 14. I mean, because we don't care about
the not. I mean, that's 10 years ago.
Yeah, we don't care about the Confederations Cup. Who cares?
Or the Nations, it's about the Euro. It's about Euro, like, and the World Cup. That's what we're focusing on.
Yeah, that's all I care about. And when I look at that, I'm like, well, because remember they have a lot of like older guys, a lot of veterans. But a lot of guys that can still produce at a really high level. And I kind of look at them. I mean, not every guy on there is old, but they do have a lot of older guys. And I'm like, maybe Pittsburgh Steelers.
Ooh.
And I'm like, okay, a little slightly older players, but they've had a taste of success. A lot of them, especially the older guys. They're not what they used to be, but they can still make a push. Like, every time their name is brought up, they're still a superpower. They're still a team that can cause some havoc. And just like the Pittsburgh Steelers, they've got plenty of older guys. They got Fitzpatrick. I mean, Watt is getting a little older now. Russell Wilson. you know, it's just a few of the guys. I mean, they still have a lot of younger pieces, but a lot of the main names on that team are getting older. And I look at that and I'm like, that seems like that would be my comp for them, just because a lot of their success came a while ago. A lot of their players are older. A lot of, you know, just a lot of their, and just their overall vibe. They seem like a team that's just, like, they don't dominate like they once do, but they'll find a way to win, just like how the Steelers are kind of now. I mean, listen, they beat, you know, they had that big 5-1 win, but, you know, you got to realize that they're still playing a couple, you know, lower teams. We'll see what happens when they get into the knockout round.
Yep, which they made it into today, so we'll see what they do.
And they were the first team in
yesterday.
So I kind of see them somewhere in between. Yeah, like the Patriots and Steelers, where they have a lot of success, but they're a lot older now. But they're still, they're just that team you can't write them off because they've had so much success, and a lot of those guys are just seasoned veterans that it's like they're crafty veterans. They know how to win. They know what it takes to win, even if they're older. So I think it's fair between the probably Patriots and Steelers for me.
All right, let's go Switzerland.
Mm-hmm. Well, historically, not great.
yeah.
You know, doing okay right now, relatively. Perfect, not perfect, but like a big mix of older guys like above 30 and young dudes who are like 22. This, to me, is the Houston Texans.
Ooh. Okay, whoa. Okay, I wasn't expecting to hear Houston this early. We're only in Group A.
Oh, so? Was there a limit on where they could go?
No, absolutely not. This is off the cuff. Okay, I like the thought, Houston. Brandon?
Yeah, I'm thinking because of not much success, but kind of always been a team that you can't forget about because they're just, you know, they'll somehow just come out of nowhere. And I feel like even though there's not a lot of success, but recently they've kind of turned things around. I wasn't focusing on age, but I'm somewhat thinking, I mean, they don't have a lot of impact players, so they might be a little bit of a reach, but just based off of success, I guess, and kind of the one or two stars that they have, even though I think there's probably it'd probably be a bad guy. You know what? I'm going to stick in the AFC North. I'm going to call them the Bengals.
Oh, okay. I like the AFC thought here. All right, Scotland. Scottish.
Okay, so this is a team that is well known just because everybody knows the country Scotland. Yet they've never been good. And this team is very old and being held together by duct tape. this is the New York Jets.
Oh, my God.
I knew it. I knew it.
Right?
Oh my God. Scotland.
I'm not even going to touch that because that was my thought.
Oh my God. All right. Oh my God. I can't hate on that. Hungary.
Well, you know, Hungary. Hungary's interesting because
they're hungry for some damn success.
Seriously.
Damn it,
now,
man.
See, here's the. What?
I said, damn it, man. Hungary and Romania suck. Okay, I'm not rooting for them. Although Romania's top of the table. Anyway, we get there.
You know, this is another older team, and The thing about Hungary is they used to be really good, like in the 50s and 60s, so a long time ago. You know, but they've made two championships between World Cup and Euro. Never won, though. So, who does that feel like to be? Oh, I got it. The Minnesota Vikings. They were in quite a few Super Bowls like 8 million years ago and have just been trash ever since.
Good in this. I love the, whoa, I got it.
I think, I don't know, that's not perfect, but I'm going with it.
Brandon?
I can see it. And then the more I think about it, I'm like, oh, when we're talking about like a lot of former success, but they've done nothing since, and they've been kind of a laughingstock. Oakland Raiders.
Oh, Oakland / Vegas,
Yeah.
You know what I mean, but yeah, but more, yeah. But listen, more so the Oakland, more so the Oakland years, obviously. Yep. But yeah, we're gonna, yeah. Yeah. But you know what I mean. Yeah, the Raiders, I think, are really good for them.
The second team,
except they've actually won.
Oh yeah. The second team to make it out of the group stage and then the knockout round just today, Spain. I have my comp for Spain. It's the Chiefs. Look at what they've done in the Euros.
Yeah,
look at what they've done historically in the Euros.
No. Spain is the 49ers.
Okay, but then
they had Hold on. Because they had a lot of success and still are successful. But you look at their most recent championships, they're over 10 years ago. They're not currently winning championships like the Chiefs.
Yeah.
So
it's fair. It's fair.
So they're the 49ers because they've had a lot of success, but it's been kind of in the past, more or less.
Brandon, what do you think?
And their fans are loud and obnoxious, just like them. But that's besides the point.
actually, yeah, I didn't think about it. Actually, yeah, what sends it over the edge for me is the fan perspective. And, of course, everybody knows my hatred for the Niners. So, you know what? It's the Niners.
I only say this because there's another team who is way better for the Chiefs, and we'll get to them shortly.
Yeah. When I think of Spain, yeah, I could see the Chiefs comp, and I was agreeing with that at first. I'm like, but then the more I looked at their stuff, and the more I'm like, I see it more as the Niners, where it's like, they probably won't win anything recent, even though you know they're going to at least contend every year. And they've got great players to back that up. But man, that's actually, wow. And they're a lot of their guys are older too.
Yeah.
You know what? It might just be I think it's the Niners. And I just cause their fan base is pretty bad. I mean, it's their country, but yeah, Spanish fans are very annoying. So yeah, I'm thinking, the Niners sounds more accurate.
The defending European champions, Italy.
Yeah. Well, it's a team with a lot of history, a lot of championships. Had a lot back in the day. Kind of disappeared for a little while, but now they're not a little while, but you know, just it didn't have as many. They had success, just none of the championships. But now they're kind of, you know, making a little comeback. It's also a very young team compared to many others. To me, this feels like the Green Bay Packers.
Mm. Oh, okay. Keep in mind, this team did not make the World Cup last time around in Qatar. That's another thing to keep in mind. I'm digging the Packers comp, Brandon.
Yeah, I'm liking it. I think it's fair. I will say they've won more than the Packers have recently. But
true.
But you know, I do kind of like the, yeah, I can see the kind of younger perspective on this, and just Italy is just a classic team. It's just a team you always expect to kind of be there due to its history and just be a real contending team. I don't know if the Packers are there quite yet right now, even though under Aaron Rodgers and under Brett Favre, they were one of the best teams in football damn near every year. And then, of course, before that, Bart Starr and, you know, winning championships with Lombardi. But, man, it's – I think it's good. I'm just trying to figure out if there's any teams that have won a bunch. Like, this could be – this could be probably where the Chiefs fall. But Chiefs have still won a little more.
Not yet, not yet.
I think yeah. I think I know what team Shane's going for the Chiefs. I think I got
yeah,
it.
We'll get I'm to just, it, but I'm just trying to think of just, you know, I think that that's fair because I'm really trying to think of what other teams can really. I mean, yeah, because it's I'm trying to think of all the teams that are really good right now, but a lot of teams that are really good right now are teams that weren't good back in the day. So yeah, I like the Green Bay comp. I think it's probably the closest.
All right, let's have some fun. Albania.
Oi.
Okay. I have a perfect one. Okay. There's a big mix of old guys who are washed up and young guys who haven't really proven anything yet. They have their moments from time to time, but they've never actually really done anything. They're just pretty bad overall. The Tennessee Titans.
The Titans are Albania. Wow, bro.
Hey, man. I think it works pretty well.
They can upset people still, yeah. Brandon?
God, is this... they're kind of on the older side. I don't want to say because it's because age-wise they're not this team, but because they haven't won anything and they never qualify for anything, I'm like, is this the goddamn Arizona Cardinals? Like,
that's not a bad one either.
No, like, it's not like, bad.
It's like, are they just a fun team because they can cause havoc? You know, they can be like a bracket buster kind of thing. It's, but yeah,
they are doing right now.
And just like the Cardinals last year, the Cardinals beat us. and you know, Josh Dobbs and the excitement that he created for that team for a few weeks. Like, you know, me, I'm thinking it could be the Cardinals.
Yes, both comps are not bad at all. This team somehow probably won't get out of the group stage here in Group B, Croatia.
Mm-hmm. Well, they got some really old vets and a bunch of really young guys mixed in there. You know, they seem to just be okay. And they've gotten to the big game once or twice, but never been able to win it. The Atlanta Falcons. You know, you got Kirk. Calais Campbell, or no, is he still there? Calais Campbell?
No,
I think he is.
No, he's not.
No, he's not. Okay.
I think he's on the
Well, top. Anyways. You got Jake Matthews, older, you know, older guys, and then you got these young people in there.
Luka Modric is Kirk Cousins.
Right. Yeah. God, pretty much.
Bro. That's ridiculous.
Or, yeah.
I guess. That one's pretty funny. Brandon?
The more I think about it, and when you were saying, oh, they've been to the dance a few times, but they just never won it, you know what instantly came to mind the second you said that statement? The Buffalo Bills.
Oh, my God. That's also...
I was like, yeah, they're the Buffalo Bills. They always get close. They just can't freaking win it. And they have a bunch of talent, but it's kind of getting older and the window is closing. So they're the Buffalo Bills to me.
Is England really the Dallas Cowboys, as Shane and Alexi Lawless have said? Brandon, do you agree that England is the Dallas Cowboys?
Yes. Next.
It's like, God, when, I mean, the thing is that, that England hasn't won anything. Like, they have one World Cup, but that was in 1966. Like, and then they were runners up in 2020, but 2020 was a weird year for everybody, so we don't even, I don't even really count 2020 at this point for anything.
They should have won. They should have won in 2020. Like, they were penalty kick away.
But you can't call them the Dallas Cowboys if they've only ever won just one title and it was in the 60s. I don't think it's fair to call them that. Like, oh my God. I mean, they're still a high rated team. And I can see where the Dallas Cowboys comp comes from. But I'm just like, I mean, oh my goodness. If I had to think of a team that, man, it's really tough. I mean, because I don't think that quite fits. I'm just trying to think of who.
I'm going to make a quick England Cowboys case here. And Shane, let me know if this is why, because I think this is why you and Alexi have this thought. It's because England gets all this hype and they do nothing with it. Correct? Is that it?
Exactly. Yeah. And also, they have a huge fan base, obviously, because, you know, it's England, but they have nothing to prove for it, you know, so.
I think Brandon is right with the titles, though, because it's been so long since it came home.
That's why I'm thinking, because they have so much talent, and I'm not thinking fan base wise. I'm thinking just team and talent and rankings and where we kind of more like what NFL team translates to where we would put them. And they have a ton of playoff appearances. They have a ton of championship appearances, but they haven't won enough for how much they've showed up in the playoffs. And
right,
I, for some reason, and the thing is their championships are dated by this point, even though it's not that old. I mean, like, even though the NFL team I'm going to say is not that old for championships, but it's old enough. I'm thinking just because of the firepower and, you know, that they excel at a lot of different, or they excel, like they should be excelling, but they're just not hitting on all cylinders every year when they get to the big moments. Baltimore Ravens.
Ooh, okay. I don't mind that either.
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's like, I don't want to say that it's the Cowboys when they've never won anything. They've won one championship in the 60s. Like, but they make the playoffs every year.
Cowboys did too.
Yeah, I know. But I'm saying, like, you know, they make the playoffs every year, but they only have, like, just like the Ravens. Ravens only have two rings to show for all their playoff appearances in their history. Like, England has, like, how many? 16, 18 appearances, and they only have one championship. I think in the World Cup, and then I think in the Euro, they've never won. So, it's one of those things that's like, a ton of firepower, and they get to the playoffs, and they just completely crash out. That's the Baltimore Ravens. So, you know, at least that's what I'm thinking. So,
It's definitely an interesting one. Definitely the one that got us into this, because it's certainly interesting. I'll give you guys the floor for your favorite teams, and we begin with Shane's country of focus here for the Euro in Denmark. Go ahead, Shane.
This one's mildly ironic because, you know, I was looking at them as, like, historically haven't been great. They've got one title, and, you know, lately they've gotten a little better, you know, not like, but no one's expecting them to win a title like now or like in the immediate future. It's the Seattle Seahawks. It's like, you know, and it's a mostly young team. Oh my
God, it's the Seahawks.
And it was not the first one that came to mind for me, but then I just, the more I thought about it, I was like, you know, I think this makes the most sense, which is, again, incredibly ironic, considering that that is my other football team. But here we are. You know, so that's what I got there.
I don't mind it, Brandon. I don't mind this one at all.
Yeah, I like, God, I actually like that comp a lot the more I think about it.
Thank you.
Slovenia!
No, we don't talk about Slovenia. We don't talk about them.
Jeez, I have no idea. Slovenia, Panthers? I don't know. Panthers? Actually, yeah, the Panthers.
Yeah, actually, you know what? Because of their FIFA ranks them at me here. Yeah, they're just so crap. It might just be the Panthers, actually.
Like, you have, I mean, because Slovenia has just, their ages are all over the place. And, you know, kind of like the Panthers, I mean, you have little 22-year-old Bryce Young and then the oldest receiver in the NFL, Adam Thielen. Like, I don't know if he's the oldest, but he's up there. Yeah, just constantly, like, mediocre at best, never been able to get it done ever, you know, just kind of floating along.
All right, what about Serbia?
Serbia. Well, not a lot better.
All right, let's start thinking of bottom feeder teams now.
Serbia. God, I don't know.
I mean, they've at least they're better than the Panthers, because
Cardinals maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, that might be fair.
You already said them, but...
Yeah, but I'm trying to think of who else. Oh, boy.
The Bears, maybe? I don't know.
No, because the Bears have a lot of form.
Bears have history, at least.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. That's actually kind of tough. Oh, my God.
Is that there's one that I think is really hard coming up, so
I have to look. Oh my God, I have to look at the NFL teams. I have to look at the divisions. I can't believe I actually have to do this, but I have to, because I'm just like, who the hell? Who in God's name is Serbia? this is like ridiculous to me. Please, no, don't, no. Don't put that on me.
God.
Don't do this to me. Oh my God, wait. Oh no, they don't. I'm trying to think of a team that has no success. Oh my God. I found it. they've been, okay, so they finished runners up in the Euro, I think, right?
One like year way or back something in like the that. Day, yeah. Yeah. That's correct.
And they don't have a lot of success, but they had some like twinklings of success back in the day. But they're just kind of inept at everything. Oh my God. Are they the Los Angeles Chargers?
Oh my God, the slander.
It's an interesting thought.
I mean, we've already said the Panthers, the Cardinals. They're not the Bears. They're not Washington. They're not. We said the Titans. They're not the Bengals, and they're not like the Patriots or Jets. The only team I can think of is the Chargers.
Oh man, I'll go with that. Netherlands, Holland.
Yeah,
that's slightly better. I mean, not slightly better in terms of better than Serbia and Slovenia, but better in terms of just like this might be an easier comp.
You know, Netherlands are interesting because they've been to the big game several times, but you know, they rarely actually get it done. They only have once, which was in 1988, but for the most part they just kind of, you know, they get there and then fizzle out, or not even get to the big game, but they get to like the semis and then fade out. And, you know, it's Netherlands is a pretty small country, not a lot there. You know, most of the guys in this team are either like 23 or 32. to me, this kind of feels like the Buffalo Bills. You know, I mean, you got a lot of young guys that they've been drafting, but then you also have like Von Miller, you know. And you had recently Diggs, who's 31. So, you know, but they're, even if they don't win it all, they're still going to be really competitive and get close. Just not quite there, you know?
Yeah, I like that, Brandon.
I mean, we're running out of teams, man.
No, we're not.
Oh, my God.
It's going to get uglier very, very soon, so be prepared.
I mean, I'm thinking of... Oh, Jesus Christ. I mean, they've won a Euro. They've been runner-up three times in the World Cup. But they're just not a team now that you really look at and you're wowed by anymore. I mean, God, is this, but they've also made, they've made a good amount of appearances, haven't they, in each of those?
Yep.
I mean, and when you think of what, we did say what, they're a mix of a little bit older and younger?
Yeah, they're probably,
I mean,
the most,
I mean, it seems. On that, I mean, if that's the case, then wouldn't they be kind of very similar to the Los Angeles Rams?
Maybe. I think there's, I think there's a better Rams comp here that we'll get to.
But I'm, yeah, because I'm just like, you know, I'm just trying to think because I'm just like, I don't see any other team with their, like, because I don't want to say Bills again because I already had the Bills are off my list, so I'm like, if I can't, I'm not gonna say that because they're not the Dolphins. And then all these other teams just don't make sense, I think, in terms of a comp. So I'm just like, the only one I can think of that makes sense to me, unless you want to say older and younger, unless you might want to say, well, I'll say them for maybe another team, but Buccaneers maybe, but I'm thinking this is more the Rams.
I have a comp for the Rams that I'm looking at it, but I think it's interesting. For
I am too. Ones.
I think there's one very clear one here. That we'll get to, but I do think it's an interesting one for sure. As Brandon said in our chat, French man, because Mbappe with that ridiculous mask that I'm sure you all saw on social media. France, is this the Chiefs, Shane?
This is the Chiefs.
Yeah, I think so.
Because here's the thing, they have been winning a lot lately. Won the World Cup in 2018, almost won this last time. And, you know, they have a kind of young guy who is probably the best in the sport at the world, best at the sport in the world.
Yep, he is the best in the world right now.
Right now. You know, with obviously Mbappe. And then, of course, with the Chiefs, that being Patrick Mahomes. Yeah, the only difference really is just that they don't have the most famous woman on the planet being a fan of theirs. But, you know, other than that, it's pretty, I mean, it feels pretty similar to me.
Yeah, I think this one's actually really good, Brandon.
Yeah, I mean, because we used the Niners earlier, this is definitely the Chiefs. Yeah, best player in the world right now. Obviously, best quarterback in the world is Patrick Mahomes. You know, they have a ton of good, you know, secondary guys like Griezmann and a couple others at other positions that, you know, really help their star player out. Which is
Conte.
Yeah, there's plenty of them. So, you know, just like at one point Mahomes had Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce, you know, but like he's got, you know, guys like Pacheco, Kelce, Neal, and then on defense, Chris Jones, you know, a whole bunch of different guys. So, and they're winning a lot recently. So, yeah, I think it is pretty much the Chiefs. I think they're one of the favorites to, or they are the favorite thing to win this whole thing. So,
it's still England in a lot of people's minds, which.
They need their head examined.
They need their head examined after these last two match days.
Maybe England is them boys.
Oh, God. No, England were the favorites before the tournament. Somehow.
So dumb. So dumb.
Gareth Southgate with horrible tactics today. Poland.
You know, I think this one's interesting to me because if you look at it, they're a team that has always underperformed, never made it to the big game that I can think of. And they're living in the shadow of Germany, the big country right next to them. The Jacksonville Jaguars.
Robert Lewandowski's Trevor Lawrence. I like that thought.
They're living in the shadow of like Jacksonville. You know, I'm sure it's a fine place, but they're totally in Miami's shadow and Tampa Bay with Tom Brady, and you know, so
I think Poland. I think that one's really good.
Jaguars.
I think that one is really good
to me.
Yeah, not a lot of success, but there have been, you know, plenty of appearances. I just think they're one of those teams that, you know, they kind of just, even though they're considered a team that can make some noise, they never fully do, even though they do have, you know, Lewandowski, and they've got, you know, Poland is just they're still a kind of a name to the world, but not, you know, just not big enough to compete with the big boys, really. Yeah, I'm thinking it is probably the Jacksonville Jaguars. That's pretty accurate to me.
Austria.
I'm glad we agree on that.
Austria.
God.
Me too. Well, another team that's never made the big game.
And they're a team that can barely qualify for the Euros, to be fairly honest.
Right. Who's just perpetually bad these days? Yeah, but the thing is, like, a lot of the bad teams in the NFL, they, like, at least they have history of being good, but they don't.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I'm struggling right now to think.
Can I reuse a team?
Yeah, sure, fine. I don't know.
Because I was going to say the Cardinals, because they're relatively young.
Everyone's you're going three times with the Cardinals, but hey, I get it.
No, this is my second time with them.
Oh, still, yeah.
I don't know. They're insignificant enough to me that I don't care.
Oh, my goodness. Sorry, Austria.
Oh, sue me. Yeah, oh, sorry.
Really. Let's go. Let's go Romania.
Oh my God! Remember, there's what is there? How many teams are in the qualifying round?
24.
So how the hell can we not put a team to each of these teams? Holy crap! Well, you know why? Because in the NFL, you know, there's not much of a gap between the really good teams and the bad ones, because they all have history. The problem is, you have to qualify to make it into this tournament. And a lot of the crap teams are so perpetually crap. They're all basically the Arizona Cardinals, the New York Jets, the Minnesota Vikings. Like, they're all just crap. They're really bad teams. So I'm just like, man, I don't know where to go.
I'm going to say this because they, you know, historically not a great team, obviously. But, yes, they are leading the group. And
somehow.
You know, it's not a great group, but they're leading it, and you know, but to me, this almost like this kind of feels like the Saints, you know, where it's like they're not great. But they are still, like, competitive for their group or their division, in their case. And I mean, yeah, the Saints have that one Super Bowl, but other than that, they've never even been. So that's really the best one I can think of.
Slovakia.
Which is sad. But...
Slovakia.
Slovakia. Hmm. I'm going to say the Chicago Bears.
All right. Brandon, anything?
I mean, if it's, you know, the Bears have history, but also at this point, I'm just thinking of just recent, because I mean, at this point, we have to stop going off of history because all these teams have history at some point in the NFL.
They both have one win, and it was kind of around the same time, like the 70s, 80s.
Yeah,
so and since then, they've just been kind of meh.
Yeah, like their current ranking right now, well, actually, they went up three spots, but their current ranking right now is 45. The highest ever been is 14. The lowest ever been is 150. Yeah, they're probably just the Bears. Honestly, they probably are just the Bears.
This is my LA Rams pick. Belgium. Golden age is over.
No. Not yet.
What? How are they not the Rams?
There's a better one.
What? Okay, what's Belgium then?
I got to think about it.
Golden generation dying. What NFL team is that?
And they don't necessarily have a statement, you know, season really.
No.
Or anything.
See, the thing is though, like because Belgium, you know, they feel a little more like the Steelers to me. That's not the right one, but because they have too many Super Bowls. But that or like, hold on. I can do this. Oh no! This is Tampa Bay. It's a pretty old team.
Lord.
I was thinking they were.
You know, they were pretty good for a little bit, and then they just, you know, and like now they're still fine, but they're not like great.
Romelu Lukaku, you know? Got smacked. Oh my God, the Bucks. Jesus.
But like they were pretty competitive for a while. I think this is the Bucks.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I'm so happy I took the Rams first because now I have the lane for the Bucks. And yeah, this is probably the Bucks. Like the Bucks, like much like how Belgium, you know, is just, you know, recently they've been rated highly. Actually, you know who they could be? Because they've never quite won anything, but they're gaining traction kind of in recent years, even though they probably still won't win anything. Even though it doesn't really make sense as a comp, maybe. Listen, I'm going to say Bucks, but I could see possibly because of them having a star that's kind of getting older, but still really good. But it could be Detroit Lions. But I still think it's the Bucks, too. I still think it's the Bucks. I won't use the Lions yet. I still think it's the Bucks.
Is Ukraine the Lions? We're going to Ukraine next.
No, Ukraine to me is more like the Chargers, just because they, you know, they have their moments, but in the end, plus they're blue and yellow, but in the end, it's, you know, it's just kind of like underwhelming.
Yeah.
I don't. And you know, it's like you're better at other sports, which is true in LA as well. You know, it's like stick to basketball. Or baseball now. But anyways, that's kind of the best I got.
Brandon? Yeah, I'm just thinking of not a lot. I mean, I'm gonna reuse the team, but I'm just thinking not a lot of playoff appearances, haven't won anything, you know. But they're kind of just there. But they're still, you know, you never know when they're small bits of talent might surprise you, even though they're just kind of middling. Maybe the Falcons.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
You know, that's probably where my head is at. But I don't mind. Yeah, I don't mind saying, you know, the Rams really. But I'm leaning more towards the Falcons because they have, you know, Falcons don't have that many playoff appearances compared to a lot of teams in the NFL, and just never won anything. So, you know, they do have a couple nice players, but not anybody crazy. They don't have any real coaching or much other talent around them besides what they've got going on, you know, the real nice pieces they've got. So they're kind of just a mess all over the place, but yet they'll, you know, there's a couple years that might surprise you. So I'm thinking they're kind of the Falcons.
We're going to the last group here and beginning with Turkey.
Now this is the Lions because
what?
Historically, historically haven't been great. And, you know, they very quick, and not that they're even that great right now, but they are. Are they winning the group or are they tied for first?
They're winning the group right now. Sorry, Brandon.
Right now they're winning.
Yeah, so I mean, just kind of like randomly, they have a pretty young team who's leading and doing okay, at least for now. You know, I mean, to me, that just kind of feels like the Lions.
It's definitely an ascending team for sure, Brandon.
Yeah, I feel like they're pretty much out of all the teams they could be, you know, and how bad they were, you know, for a lot of their time, but now they're kind of ascending slowly but surely each year. And they're kind of, you know, especially like, even though it seems like a long time ago, you gotta realize that these tournaments every 4 years. So they were semifinalists in the Euros in 2008. They were third place in the World Cup in 2002. But before that, they really just didn't have any real history. But they're kind of slowly kind of catching on as the years go on. I'm thinking Detroit is probably fine. Yeah, a lot of good young players that just play hard. So, I mean, I'm thinking the Lions is fine.
Portugal. Is Portugal the Philadelphia Eagles, Brandon? We've actually been talking about this.
You know what's funny?
Oh, this is the Rams.
Don't make me smack
this
you.
This is the Rams.
What? How? No.
I'm sorry. Don't make me smack you.
Okay, wait. Brandon, explain why this might be the Eagles or what you think.
I have two
Eagles teams. Works though, I think.
And here's the thing. I have just like your Danish men are the Seahawks. I have two teams. But I'm gonna explain to you why they're the Philadelphia Eagles. Talent everywhere. And every single one of the players, both like just like on the Eagles and on Portugal, they've all come from different teams at some point, but they're all the top best in the world at their position, or in the top five in the world at their positions. Like when you look at Portugal's roster and how loaded it is, like Ronaldo, Vitinha, Bruno Fernandes, Bernardo Silva. You know, like the list goes on. Even the back, even Pepe. Pepe is one of the best defenders in the world. Even at his age, he's still one of the best defenders in the world because he might not be as fast as he once was, but he can do the job. Like, Philadelphia Eagles have players at every position that know their role, that can literally hang with the best of you. And it's like they didn't have just like the Eagles and Portugal. Listen, man, because I know. Loud ass annoying fans, and I'm one of them. Obviously for both teams, you know, we're proud, we will die for our team. You know, and the thing is, Portugal is one of those teams that has always had history but never won anything until recently. That also sounds like the Philadelphia Eagles. A lot of history but never won anything, but a lot of good history, but then winning things recently and staying there at that level. So Portugal and Philly make a lot of sense. Although Portugal, I mean, listen, Ronaldo's old, but if you think about it, look at all the Portuguese. We have a lot of very, very fast players and very fancy footwork kind of players, very flashy, like Ronaldo, like Leao. But you know, haven't won a whole lot, but they're always in that conversation every year and have been for a long time, even back in the day. I can even see, and especially with a different head coach at the helm, and you know, we'll see what happens kind of thing. But you know, I can see them also being comped as the Miami Dolphins.
So, I'm
almost in the middle where I'm like, I can't decide if I want to comp them as the Eagles or the Dolphins, because both of them make a lot of sense. So it's, you know, it's like, because between the Dolphins and the Eagles, both are, you know, sexier teams nowadays. Both are in known markets, Philly and Miami, and Portugal is a very known soccer team. You know, they're always going to be one of the teams we talk about every year as potentially being a contender, just like Portugal. Both, you know, it's, so I'm kind of in the middle between both teams, just because, you know, it's one of those things where I look at it, and Roberto Martinez, you know, he's slightly younger. He's 50. So he's on the younger side of things a little bit. So he could be that kind of, you know, McDaniel, Sirianni comp. I mean, Sirianni definitely, because I didn't like the fact we made no substitutions until the 90th goddamn minute of the game last time out. But, you know, and, you know, so I'm often wondering if they, like, I almost think I have to make two comps. I think that they are a hybrid of the Philadelphia Eagles and Miami Dolphins.
Shane, why are they the Rams in your mind?
All the reasons Brandon listed about why they're the Eagles also apply to the Rams. I mean, the Rams' biggest star is a guy who's in his upper 30s and has had injury problems, just like Ronaldo. He's kind of been banged up lately, but you know, both of those guys stayed loyal to their teams for a long time, and then finally were like, all right, I'm gonna go on to something, you know, bigger and better, whether financially or whatever. And I mean, not just that, but it's also like, you know, they've both won a championship recently, somewhat recently. I mean, it was 2016 for Portugal, but still, I mean, it's when these tournaments happen every 2 years, you know, it's that's bound to be that way. But anyways, plus, you know, just like, I guess another thing too that comes to mind for me is how, you know, LA, they do have a lot of like new up and coming kind of flashy guys like Puka Nacua and, you know, that corner, I forget his name, but, and aside from that, it's just, you know, I was thinking about like, cause I've been to Portugal and to, LA, and they are very similar kind of feeling places just based off like the weather and the environment that's there, like as far as the kind of plants you have and whatnot. So it just, that was part of it too. But you know, I think Eagles or Rams works best as a comp personally. I don't really see Miami, but you know, that's just me.
Yeah, I definitely think it's one of the more interesting teams on this list. Let's go Czechia, as they're calling it in Euros this year, Czech Republic.
You know, this is an interesting one because they have made the big game a few times, but it's been a long time since that happened. I think it was it the 70s, so
yeah.
You know, but ultimately, I think, to me, this kind of feels like the Raiders, you know? Like, ever since then, they've just been kind of okay, not great. Haven't really done anything, but, you know, back in, like, 70s, 80s, it was like, wow, these guys are great. I guess, like, Washington would also work for that, but I'll say the Raiders.
You know, I'm thinking like they're past their heyday, even though they still, you know, every now and then kind of pop up as a team. But it's like they're a team that has a lot of history behind them, but have really not kind of done anything in recent years and kind of just fallen off the face of the island. Like, I can see the Raiders comp, and I'm thinking, God, they have a lot of success behind them, especially in the Euros.
I also thought about the Giants.
That's why I'm thinking it could be the New York Football Giants. Because I'm just like, because they have that one title, just like, but I mean, Giants fans have more than one title, but it's like, when I'm thinking of just how much, see, they're not like, the fan base isn't loud enough or big enough to be like Giants fans. Giants fans are just, like the rest of the NFC, annoying and cancerous as all hell.
Yeah, actually, I'm going to say Washington. I think they feel like the commies.
Yeah, I'm
my God.
Because the more I think about it, they have more of a history. Yeah, because I think the Giants have more titles than Washington. I'm thinking, yeah, they're probably Washington. Like, they just seem like they've got just like a bunch of inept higher ups, despite the fact they have a lot of history. And it just seems like, you know, there's kind of been, especially with them, you know, a lot of their guys are kind of on the younger side of things. There are a lot of their guys are 25 or, like, you know, 26 or younger. So a lot of them are a lot younger, especially in their starting nine, but or starting 11, I should say. But yeah, I'm thinking they're Washington because they just have a lot of younger guys that can make an impact. They have a lot of former history, but just their higher ups are just, there's a lot of turnover amongst that, and they're just not really a team that nowadays you really care for or that can really make much of a push. So yeah, I'm thinking they're more so Washington.
I love how we don't call Washington the Washington Commanders. We just say Washington. We're so tired of that thing. Yeah.
That's a stupid name.
Because if I stay watching, I'm gonna say Redskins again because I'm just so used to that name.
Oh my God.
Yeah, like Cleveland Guardians.
Yeah, I just
that's a dumb name too.
Yeah, Guardians makes no sense. You could have just called them what their old team name was, the Cleveland Spiders, if you were gonna rename them.
What are you excited? Are you guys excited for Utah Hockey Club?
No.
Shut up.
No, we don't care about the hockey club. We don't care about the football team.
Let's finish out with the newcomer on the block, Georgia.
They could be living anybody.
Do we have to?
They're
probably one of the younger teams.
Yep.
I don't think they've ever had like really any success at all.
No.
To me, because of where they came out of left field from to make this Euro, just like last year, they came out of nowhere and I haven't used them yet. These are my Houston Texans.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
That's great. I like that.
That's good.
I already used Houston on Switzerland. Now I'm regretting it.
No, but this is Georgia's first Euros, so this is their first major tournament appearance, I think, ever.
Who could still possibly make sense? I mean, they're not.
Well, the Seattle Mariners. No.
I was gonna say they've come on the scene kind of recently. They've made the playoffs a little bit more recently, even though they have a long history of doing absolutely just jack nothing. They could even be the Cleveland Browns. But I think that they're better than that. So I'm thinking I'm fine with the Houston Texans pick.
Actually, yeah. Cleveland isn't bad.
Yeah.
I'll go with that. Screw it.
All right. There we go. That's all the Euro teams as NFL. Yeah. Definitely a bit more complicated, but that was definitely fun. We're not gonna do it for Copa America because most of the teams there aren't that interesting. But if we do lose to Bolivia, I don't know what's going to happen to the show if we lose to Bolivia.
And we'll be the Dallas Cowboys.
Oh my God, I'll be so mad. And they're playing at Jerry World, so there you go. All right, let's do Talladega Nights. Ricky Bobby. All right, Brandon, talk about this movie and why you picked it to finish us off for the night.
So, you know, this was obviously my third and final in the kind of series we've had here of doing, like, sports comedies, but this one's more of a sports comedy, I think, than Happy Gilmore is, obviously. This one's based around NASCAR. But I wanted to do, I mean, a Will Ferrell movie. And just, you know, it's directed by Adam McKay. Adam McKay has done a lot of my favorite comedy movies ever, really. He also just works well with Will Ferrell. It's another one where it's a lot of guys that have you know, the cast has been in a lot of great movies. Well, the cast is super funny. Obviously, Will Ferrell's longtime friend and collaborator, John C. Reilly, is in it. Anytime they're together, I'll watch it. I don't care what it is. But Talladega Nights, you know, when you say you want to watch it, Rob, and of course, Shane and I know it, it's so quotable. It's so, just like Happy Gilmore, just like Major League. It's so funny. Like, it might be bizarre because it just goes from one extreme to the other and just gets progressively just weirder as the movie goes on. but, God, is it great? I mean, my favorite scene in the movie, there's a ton of them. Like when he breaks his arm in the bar, that whole scene right there is funny to me. Obviously when he has his injury, when he gets, or he believes he's on fire when he crashes his car.
Is that his underwear?
Yeah. What is it? When he becomes a pizza delivery man because he's lost his confidence in how to race. Or just the fact that his kids run their mouth a lot and they have wild potty mouths is kind of funny to me.
Well, look at what he says when they pray for dinner. Like, no wonder they talk like that.
Yeah. But, you know, like, the fact that he insists on the prayer, on praying to sweet baby Jesus, even though Jesus was a man with a beard. Like, it's like, there's a lot of funny things that happen throughout the movie. But yeah, it's definitely, you don't see a comedy movie where you get a, like, this isn't just a comedy movie. It's a clash of philosophies, or just a clash of lifestyles, you know, gay versus straight, friend versus foe, American versus European. You know, a lot of, there's definitely a, you know, like growing up privileged versus, you know, not so much. There's a lot of that in this movie, which kind of makes it funny if you pay attention to the background. But God, is it definitely one of the funniest things. I love how throughout his whole life, he carries that phrase that he's like, you know, if you ain't first, you're last. And he's like Ricky. And then eventually later in the movie, he's like, when he gets thrown out of Applebee's and he walks away, his father's like, Ricky, I was high when I said that. He's like, what the hell does that even mean?
you can be third, fourth, or fifth.
Yeah. Like, it's just like, oh my God. It's like, there's a lot of things that are funny about it. Or obviously when they crash their cars, they crash their cars in the last lap of the race and they run to the finish line. You know, that's obviously a great moment. You know, what is it? God, I mean, even some of the sight gags, like there's a, you know, it's funny when, what the hell is the shirt that, oh, well, it's technically a sight gag. It's a running gag with the Panther. Oh, the Panther, the Jag. What is that? Jaguar, Cheetah, whatever the thing is in the car.
It's a cougar.
Cougar. Yeah. Like that thing constantly attacking him.
And then he does the driver's test. It's like, Ricky, that was phenomenal. And he's like, ah! Because it's a fucking cougar.
Like, it's just so, like, the movie is so ridiculous because, you know, it's a Will Ferrell movie. It's going to be ridiculous. And I either want to do this one or I want to do Semi-Pro. And it's funny because I like Semi-Pro more than this. But it's just, like, I always love making fun of just, like, professional sports in a way that's like, that's, you know, especially from that era. Like NASCAR in the mid 2000s was actually really big. Like it still is big. It's still a major company, but in the mid 2000s, it was same. Yeah. In the mid 2000s, NASCAR was massive.
And they got all the Fox guys too in this movie.
Yeah.
Mike Joy, yeah. Michael Waltrip. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, they got the NBC guys too that even did it. Of course, Dale Earnhardt Jr. makes a cameo in the movie.
Sign this. I don't want the other drivers to know.
or the best part is when he's just signing things. He ends up signing Susan's
head.
Yeah, and he's like, sorry. He's like, you know what? I get in signing mode. You just gotta stay out of my way. Like it's, you know, it's. One of those, it's just everything has kind of had its own little way, kind of just being slightly, you know, even if it's not a ha-ha, like, hilarious gag, it's still pretty funny.
Yeah.
But, like, it's just a lot of Will Ferrell's comedies from that era are my favorite comedy movies ever, but there's a reason why this one has still held up throughout all the years and not, like, soured on people or people still find it funny. But it's definitely one of the movies I will always watch whenever it comes on, either on TV or even if it's on, it was on, I believe Max, like a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
So,
it was on Netflix for me. That's how I got to watch.
Yeah.
It.
But it's so good. It's so good. Like if anybody hasn't seen it, you know, listening to us, if you want a good laugh, just like Major League, just like Happy Gilmore, watch this. Cause you might be weirded out by it a little bit. It might. And the thing is, if you walk away for 2 minutes, the movie kind of goes crazy at times, so it might confuse you if you walk away for a little bit of time. But watch the movie. Sit down and watch the whole movie. It's so funny. I love everything about it. And the thing is, I don't like NASCAR, but I love this movie because it makes fun of it.
Yeah.
So
I enjoy NASCAR to a point. I love Daytona. I had a bunch of family friends that were NASCAR fans. For me, this movie is just a confusing, weird mess. But that's why I love it. It just, as you said, Brandon, it goes like a million miles an hour, pun intended there, in like so many different ways. And that's what makes the film great for me. It gets an 8. That's really all I can say. And also, Shake and Bake. Shake and Bake, baby.
Don't forget, when he changes his name to the Magic Man, now you see me, now you don't.
And it's like John Cena? Question mark? But no, like, that's all I can really say. This movie is just confusing, weird, fun. And that's all I really got out of it. I'm going to give it an 8, though. I enjoyed the hell out of it. But it's so confusing and so weird. But that's just kind of my overall thought. I had no other really big thoughts. I was like, this is just a movie you can chill out to and just enjoy.
And it's good fun.
We haven't really gotten, like, a movie where I don't have to think much. And this was certainly one of them. Shane, what are your thoughts on Talladega Nights to finish this up here?
You know, this is like, if you want to talk about how a film can influence, not necessarily pop culture, but just your perspective on things, I guess. You know, when I think of like a, you know, arrogant race car driver from like middle America, this is exactly what I think of. not because they're like this. I don't know what those guys are like, but it's just having this movie in my head. It's so enjoyable in the most annoying way possible, and it's so funny. And yeah, it's just, and it's very quotable. That's, you know, that's like the one thing that people always say about it, but it's true. I mean, it just is. You know, I loved, you know, right from the get-go when he's, you know, born in the back of the car, you're like, oh God, okay, this is going to be interesting. you know, and then...
I want to go fast!
You're right.
Also, I'm going to break your arm. Brace his arm.
And then he's, Sean, you know, sitting there praying in front of his family and like, thank you, Lord, for my beautiful, sexy wife. And she's like, oh, yeah. It's just like, what?
Well, the best part about that scene is how it starts when she's like, I've been slaving over the stove for hours, and it's literally just like KFC. It's a bunch of fried food that you get like anywhere else, like a bunch of fried food and Domino's.
And yeah.
Yeah, or, you know, or when he's running around on the track in his underwear, help me, Jesus, help me, Jewish God, help me, help me, all, oh, help me, Tom Cruise. Just like, what? It doesn't make sense, but it's hilarious.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing, is that it doesn't make sense, but that's what makes it great.
But yeah, no, it's fantastic. So I always loved this movie, and it's, you know, it's nothing too deep and profound, but it's just like, you want to shut your brain off, have a good time with some buddies, you know, have a couple drinks and a pizza, whatever. Like, it's perfect for that.
It's the ideal movie for that, I would say.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, and I mean, there's a reason it's still, you know, talked about and still popular to this day, so. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bizarre movie, but it's a fun one. Any last thoughts before we call it a week here?
Oh, no, sure. You know what I was thinking of real quick? That, because I never mentioned it when I was talking about it, but the weird confrontation they have at Gerard's party at his house. You know, but yeah, I always laugh because.
I want to go on a farm.
Like his party guests are Elvis Costello and Mos Def. Like, why are they in this movie? No one knows. No one cares. It's just that they just are. You know, but it's like
a lot of people, you know, in this movie. Like, well known people.
Yeah, there's a lot of, that's another crazy thing. There's a lot of well known people. And people that have either been around Will Ferrell, and like a lot of people, like, you know, like David Koshner, obviously, who's been in a lot of movies with him, especially the Anchorman movies, you know, Sacha Baron Cohen being funny himself, John C. Reilly, but then you get, you know, Pat Hingle, who people might remember as playing Jim Gordon in the Batman movies in the late 80s, early 90s. Rob Riggle's in there. Of course, I said Elvis Costello, Mos Def. Frank Welker, who many know has the voice of Scooby-Doo. He's the voice of the cougar. He does the vocal sounds for the cougar. And of course, you got the drivers. You got a whole bunch of drivers. You got Bush in there, Jimmy Johnson, the Earnhardts, you know, Mike Wallace, Jeff Gordon. So many different, you know, people in there. But my God, is it funny. Like, I'm so happy that we all kind of decided on it, because it's just, everybody plays their, like, it's a comedy movie, but there's so many great actors in it that know how to play their role and play it very funny and very satirical to NASCAR. So, you know what? It's, yeah, if you want to just shake your brain off and have a good time and just laugh about it, about just a very, like, stereotypical, like, NASCAR, but, like, you know, down south kind of, or more so middle America kind of, like, you know, funny just movie. That's just nonsensical, but it's still, you know, it does make sense when you think about it, just because it's making fun of a sport. It's funny. It's so funny. Anybody, just good popcorn flick, put it that way.
Oh, 100%. 100%. All right. And with that, we are calling it a show. Thank you to Shane. Thank you to Brandon. Thank you for everyone joining us. And we will see you next week.
Take care, everybody.
Have a good one, everybody. We'll see you next time.